Okay, let's dive in. Today, we're looking into a case that's, well, deeply unsettling. It's one of those stories where the official record feels incomplete, almost like someone deliberately broke the tape. We've been digging through two really distinct layers of material for this. First, you have the chilling historical account of this one horrific event, but then there's this other layer notes, really, about unseen horror itself, how it works, how it gets documented, and maybe how it always stays just out of view. So our mission today isn't just to recount what happened with Silas Reed. We want to push it, look at it through a more disturbing lens. Was this just one disturbed man, a tragedy? Or was it something else, like maybe a brush with a bigger system, a pattern? Or, as the notes hint, maybe an entity that just refuses to be seen clearly? Right. Let's set the scene first. We start in Wilmington, Delaware. The year is 1942. We meet Silas Reed outwardly. Just vacuum cleaner salesman. They actually called him the clean one in some reports. Meticulous, polite, almost unnervingly normal on the surface. Mm-hmm. But underneath, yeah, underneath he had this deep toxic hatred simmering away.
Completely secret, apparently. According to the official story, he blamed women for everything wrong in his life. Losing his job, his divorce from someone named Lunatic, strangely enough, even his own mother's death. It sounds like this profound psychological wound, maybe made worse by, you know, post-war changes or just a complete personal breakdown, deeply, deeply disturbed. And from that really twisted place, he decided he had to, quote, cleanse the city. His planning was horrifyingly methodical, very precise. Fast forward 10 years, July 16th, 1952. He targets a women's convention. It's at the Sycamore Hotel. Almost 300 women there for, I think, a charity event. Silas walks in, unnoticed, still in his salesman uniform, carrying what looks like his usual vacuum cleaner. But it wasn't. This is where it gets. Technically fascinating in the worst way. It was a homemade gas dispersal unit. He'd built it himself. Scavenged parts from old wartime gear. Just think about that. A weapon of mass horror disguised as an everyday appliance. And the execution. It was chillingly precise. Forensic, almost. He locked the ballroom exits. Then he activated the device. The records are specific. Disturbingly so. It took exactly 11 minutes, they call it the vault fill time, for the gas to fill that room. The result was 107 women dead. And before the authorities even arrived on scene, Silas Reed was gone. Vanished. It took them 2 full years to find him. Which is where the standard narrative, the lone madman story, starts to fray. Because when they caught him, he wasn't sent to prison for mass murder. He was committed to an asylum. Mm. So yeah, looking at it that way, it just screams systemic failure, doesn't it? How is someone this obviously dangerous, nursing this violent hatred, not flagged? Why wasn't he watched more closely, sending him to an asylum, not prison? It feels like a massive failure of the justice system, or mental health, or both. Like a catastrophic oversight, a tragic result of a system just not catching someone falling through the cracks. A human horror born from human failure.
Right, but that's exactly where it gets so fascinating and, frankly, deeply disturbing, because the official record you just laid out perfectly, it immediately sets up this huge, almost intentional feeling contradiction. Silas Reed, responsible for 107 deaths. After 15 years in an institution, he's declared cured, released.
Cured, yeah.
Exactly. And if we connect this to the themes in our other source material, the notes on unseen horror, it forces you to ask, what is a cure for that? And who gets to decide? This moves beyond just one man's trauma or a simple system failure. This starts to look like what those notes call bureaucratic horror.
Bureaucratic horror. Okay, unpack that a bit.
Well, it's the idea that a system just forms, requests, internal memos, maybe from what the sources call these unknowable departments, mm-hmm. can actually orchestrate something terrifying. It's not about one evil person pulling strings necessarily. It's about a cold, impersonal process that just grinds towards a horrifying outcome.
Hmm. Like the system itself becomes the monster.
Yeah.
Precisely. And that ties directly into this core idea from the notes. Everything is part of something larger, a system, a cover-up, a pattern, a test. So with Silas Reed, the man, the event, was he part of some kind of test? Was his release flagged as an incident for some other purpose? Something beyond just letting a supposedly cured man go?
A test. What kind of test?
That's the chilling question. The deliberate contradiction declaring someone that dangerous cured, it feels wrong. Illogical. The sources suggest it could be a kind of memory loop.
A memory loop.
Yeah, it's a terrifying concept. It suggests certain events aren't unique. They're patterns, maybe even pre-programmed sequences and some larger design. History not just repeating, but being made to repeat.
Okay, yeah, that's definitely.
And the notes say, the deeper you dig into a case like this, the harder it becomes to not see patterns. Repeating numbers, names popping up elsewhere. They call it parasitic footage.
Parasitic footage. Like, once you see it, you can't unsee it. It infects how you look at everything.
Exactly. It attaches itself to your perception, and it makes those connections feel less like coincidence and more like evidence. The sources also bring up ambient entities, not ghosts in sheets, you know, more like influences. Things that subtly corrupt the environment, or people's decisions, or the systems themselves.
What's up the system?
Ah. Think about it. What if those forms, those requests, the bureaucratic process that led to Silas Reed's release, what if it was subtly nudged, influenced by something unseen, leading to an outcome that just makes no rational sense? It wouldn't be just human error then. It would be something bending the rules from inside the system itself.
So the real horror isn't just the attack.
It's the unseen forces potentially manipulating the aftermath, making sure he got back out.
I see what you're saying about the release, and yeah, bureaucratic horror is a chilling phrase. It definitely adds this layer of dread. But I still come back to the man himself. The human element feels so undeniable. Silas Reed's rage, the hatred, it felt personal, didn't it? That vault fill time, the 11 minutes, the exit point failures, how he specifically blocked the escapes, those were human plans. Monstrous, yes, but engineered by a human mind. His actions, the planning, the execution, they scream individual pathology, a mind warped by trauma, by failure.
Okay, but is it truly individual and isolated if the system then behaves so strangely?
Yeah.
You mentioned his capture after 2 years. Okay, human manhunt, fine. But why the asylum? Why not prison for a calculated mass murder like that? That's a huge diversion, isn't it?
It is a strange turn, I admit.
And what if the official archive, the public case file, isn't the whole story? What if there are hints of surveillance before or even after his capture? Remember that phrase from the notes? The tape never blinked.
Implying constant observation.
Yeah, exactly. A complete unbroken record might exist somewhere, hidden, suggesting a level of observation, maybe even control, far beyond just catching a killer. It pushes past human cunning into something monitored, watched. Mm-hmm. And that brings us back to a key idea. Silence is suspicious. Oh. The complete lack of a real explanation for his cure, the opacity around the decision to release him, that gap, that dead air in the official story. It isn't just missing information. It feels like a point of tension, something deliberately hidden, redacted.
So the silence itself is the clue.
It suggests a truth maybe far worse than just a mistake. That silence isn't empty. It's heavy with implication. And it escalates the horror, doesn't it? From one man's terrible act to something systemic, maybe deliberate. Imagine that phrase. The last log ends with a knock.
A knock. What does that mean?
Who knows? But what was that final bureaucratic step? That last form sign? That last quiet decision made in some back office that triggered his release? Who made that final call and why?
The horror isn't just the crime, but the process that let him walk free.
Exactly. The system didn't just fail. Maybe it performed its function perfectly. According to some unseen logic, it's not a breakdown. It's a cold operation. The human monster was just a component.
Okay. So wrapping my head around this, on one side, we have Silas Reed, the horrific attack. A man driven by personal demons executes this meticulous mass murder. A dark chapter, absolutely, rooted in individual pathology and, yes, undeniable systemic failures, human cruelty, human failing.
And on the other side, we have this deeply unsettling counter-narrative. Pulled from these other notes, the idea that Reed's case, especially his institutionalization, his supposed cure, his release, it feels less random, less like an isolated incident, more like a sequence, carefully orchestrated maybe, part of a larger unseen mechanism or pattern that we still don't fully grasp, perhaps the one that's still running.
Which leaves us right here, doesn't it, with this really disturbing question. What if the real horror of Silas Reed isn't just the 107 lies he took? What if it's the thought that someone, somewhere, signed off on his cure, released him, not as a mistake, not an oversight, but as a calculated step in some ongoing unseen story?
Some stories just don't end neatly.
No, they don't. They just leave these threads dangling, waiting for you to pull them. And maybe the answers or just more chilling questions are waiting in whatever happened after Silas Reed walked out of that asylum. We'll definitely have to pick this up again. That feels like part two.